Welcome to In the Hive, I'm Roger McDonough. During his monthly news conference on PBS Utah last week, Governor Spencer Cox sounded the alarm about our region's historic drought conditions.
Let me just state unequivocally, guys, it's really bad. It's as bad as it's been. We need everyone in the state to understand right now that we're heading into one of the worst drought and potentially worst fire seasons that we've seen, and we've seen some bad ones.
It's as bad as it's been, and we need to be mindful of our own behaviors to help conserve water. Earlier this spring, the governor declared an emergency due to drought conditions. Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall placed Utah's capital city under a water shortage advisory soon after that. Scientists say that a swath of the western United States is far drier than it was a year ago at this same time, at the start of the record-breaking 2020 fire season. We'll come back to wildfires in just a little bit. But to get a better sense of the state of our water supply and how bad it really is, I spoke to...
My name is Jordan Clayton. I'm the supervisor of the Utah Snow Survey, which is part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And within that, it's part of the Natural Resources Conservation Service.
The Natural Resources Conservation Service used to be called the Soil Conservation Service, which emerged out of the Dust Bowl crisis from farming practices that led to desertification of the land in the American Great Plains. Chiefly, the NRCS is concerned with soil conditions and moisture. It's part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Here in Utah, the agency monitors snowpack and soil moisture. And, well, things haven't been looking good.
This year is a bad year, and it's something that we should talk about because there are several things coming together this year that are unfortunate. We're well below average in terms of our snowpack. That's not a surprise, and we've been in this terrain before in terms of having a below average snowpack, so that's not uncharted territory. What's unfortunate about this year is that those low snowpack came on the heels of a particularly dry and warm summer, last summer, that lacked a monsoon into the fall. And we started off the winter season with a very strong soil moisture deficit, meaning that our soils had not been this dry in quite some time. And as things continued to dry down in the soils below our snowpack, we actually entered an area where we'd never seen soils this dry since we put in our soil moisture sensors about 20 years ago. And the reason why the dry soils matters is that, you know, normally when we get, for example, you know, a subpar snowpack year, we expect a certain amount of runoff from that snow to still affect our reservoirs and streams. And, you know, it's maybe below par, but at least we're going to get that certain amount. That's the way that the regression works. When we have soil moisture that's that dry, we lose a much larger proportion of that available water to the ground, and it doesn't actually make it downstream to the reservoirs.
Does that mean it's getting absorbed higher up because the soils up there are just drier and are taking in the water?
Yeah, essentially you're filling that bucket before it can be exceeded and start to go downhill. And it's not quite that simple, but that's generally the way you can conceive of it. It's you have to fill that kind of headwater bucket of available storage in the soil moisture column before all that excess water can start getting delivered into your stream and to your downstream reservoirs. And unfortunately, what we were worried about all winter when we were seeing those really dry soil moisture levels has come true. We're seeing a lot of locations across the state, the streams having a really minimal response to the snowpack melting, which is really alarming. And again, it is what we anticipated, which is why we published such dire and pessimistic forecasts. So our job is to correlate or to predict, I should say, how much water we think we're going to get from the snowpack during the April to July runoff period. So, you know, if we have a certain amount of snowpack on the mountain, we anticipate this much will be delivered, you know, between those months, again, between April and July at these different runoff points based on, you know, previous years. This year, our predictions have been very, very low because, again, of the conditions that we're seeing on the ground or below the ground. And that's unfortunately exactly what we're getting right now.
Jordan, there's this, I have a folder in my inbox in my email that is called EGADS Yikes. And into that folder, I put an email that you sent out in early May, I guess it was May 1st, that included a summary of the May 1st Water Supply Outlook Report. And that summary said, water managers should prepare for exceptionally poor to potentially worst on record water supply conditions for the summer. Worst on record. I mean, this is, you're making recommendations for water managers, they might have to consider things like significant cutbacks in water uses or water supply. Is that the case, or is it out of your hands once you make that recommendation? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is out of my hands. Our job here is to report on what the conditions are and not necessarily to provide management recommendations. We certainly can help guide those recommendations. But the reason why I wrote that line, and it was intentional, is to really get people's attention, because for several basins in the state, the combination of those really, really poor streamflow forecasts and reservoirs that are already drawn down, which is another one of those parameters that's coming together right now that, you know, like I said at the top of the interview, is unfortunate. And the combination of those factors is causing a few areas in the state, and in fact, more than a few, to have an outlook in terms of water supply that could be worst on record this summer. And when I say that, I'm talking about areas like, for example, the headwaters of the Upper Sevier, the Beaver headwaters, the Joes Valley area, even the Little Bear, and some other larger rivers like the Weber and the Ogden are just a little bit better than that, but could also see exceptionally poor water supply conditions. And again, what we're dealing with is several parameters coming together. You got the poor snowpack, you have the dry soils that's absorbing the little water that's coming off the snowpack. So that's leading to really low predictions for runoff. And then we have the fact that we're 15% lower statewide in our reservoir capacity, in our reservoir storage than we were last year. And last year was really just benefiting from the previous winter's snowpack. So, you know, last year wasn't a banner snow year, but it was still up from the previous year at that point. And so we're kind of in the hole a little bit in terms of our water supply, and several basins in the state may see a combination of conditions that's a little bit unprecedented.
You know, this isn't just Utah, it's much of the U.S. West, especially the Southwest. I know that we're in the grips of a drought. I guess just as a region, should we be expecting more and more bad water years going forward? More drought, you know, more fires and the like into the future? And then I guess a follow-up might be, is there any kind of way of, you know, being resilient, of adapting to that, of weathering that? I guess maybe let's start with one question at a time. One is, should we be expecting more of these bad years, and or is that not something that you guys predict?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer. We don't still have a clear picture on what we can predict, because what we see is at the middle elevations on the mountains, we're seeing a change in the duration of our snow being on the ground. We're seeing a mix of more rain and snow, that kind of thing, in the middle elevations. The upper elevation picture is harder to diagnose at this point. It may be that there's you know, some of the same effects happening there, but it's a little harder to tease out based on the data that we have. What is becoming a little bit more apparent is over the last 10 to 15 years or so, we've seen a kind of feast or famine type snowpack, where we've had several really large snowpack years, like 2011, 2017, were both excellent. 2019 to a certain extent. Unfortunately, in between those years have been catastrophically bad in several cases. There's just been extraordinarily poor snowpack conditions several times and interspersed there. And not a lot of years of what we would call average. There's just, you know, it's been flip-flopping back and forth and not a lot of what we would call normal, if you will. And so that is something that we're observing. You know, it would be nice to get more just of a normal distribution of many years around the mean, so to speak, but that's just not what we've been seeing.
That's interesting. Predictability would be obviously phenomenal in this particular game. Able to say each year we're going to have this amount delivered, but that's hard with something like weather, right?
Right. And then to get to your second question, you can tackle the scarcity problem from two different angles, and they both have virtue. You can approach it from saying, when we have uncertainty in what's coming from nature, we need to have more certainty in our supply. So that means we need to have larger capacity in our reservoir system, that kind of thing. Whether or not that means storing more water in the existing reservoirs or creating more storage, you know, above ground or below ground or whatever, wherever that's going to be, that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is how much is being used. You can tackle, again, this problem from both sides. You can work on the demand side of water and work on conservation and from a number of different angles. So, and that, again, I think there is virtue in both sides of that problem.
Jordan, is there anything, any takeaways, you know, to the sort of general listener? You know, you've got your report that goes out and I think is geared to a certain extent towards again, as you said, water managers or those who are thinking about water supply for any number of uses, not just municipal uses. But for the average listener, is there anything that you think they should take away from this about where we are and anything more explicit you want to say there?
I guess my recommendation would be we're very likely going to be facing water shortages this summer. And again, I'm not a water manager. I'm not in the distribution business. But that being said, it seems very likely that multiple places across the state, if not the majority of the state, is going to be dealing with shortages. And what is avoidable it would be to point fingers back and forth and say, well, you know, this area, this sector of the economy uses more than it should, or this one does, municipalities versus agriculture, that kind of thing. And that's a pointless game. The whole state needs to work on dealing with the shortages constructively. And so I guess my recommendation would be, if you're listening to this, do your part. There's things that everyone can do, whether, again, you're using it for irrigation or you're using it to water your lawn or whatever the use is of your water. Everyone can do their part to make sure that they're being a good steward of Utah's resource.
Again, that's Jordan Clayton with the Natural Resources Conservation Service talking about the drought that we are living through. So what does the lack of runoff in our canyon streams, what does that mean for the water supply for residents here in populous northern Utah? Yesterday, I spoke with Laura Briefer, director of the Salt Lake City Department of Public Utilities, which provides water to Utah's capital city and to a number of other municipalities in our region. What does the scant runoff, or the lack of runoff, if there was no runoff, what does that mean for the city and for its water customers, if you can encapsulate that or package it?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I can tell you, first of all, it's important to understand the sources of Salt Lake City's water supply for our service area. And our service area for water deliveries includes Salt Lake City as well as a number of communities along the east bench of Salt Lake County. So that also includes communities such as Mill Creek, Cottonwood Heights, Holiday, and small portions of South Salt Lake, Murray, and Midvale. Hmm. So we have about 360,000 customers, a little over that, within our drinking water service area. And these communities all rely upon a mix of different water sources. So on any given year, we get about 50 to 60% of our drinking water from our local canyon streams, primarily City Creek, Parley's Creek, Big Cottonwood Creek, and Little Cottonwood Creek. We also have interests in Deer Creek Reservoir through the Provo River Water Users Association and Metropolitan Water District of Salt Lake and Sandy. And our interest in Deer Creek Reservoir on any given year is approximately 30 to 35% of our water supplies. And then we also have groundwater resources available to us. We have about 25 or 26 drinking water wells throughout our service area that on average provide, 10 to 15% of the water supply. So one thing we're fortunate about is that we have a diversity of supplies, and that's by design.
Right.
We wanted to make sure that during drought periods, such as what we're experiencing this year, that we have stored water in reservoirs to help get us through the high demand season in the summer. So our surface water sources that, we directly intake into our various water treatment plants that then get distributed through our water distribution system, those sources of water are very low. They range between 34% in City Creek Canyon to 52% in Little Cottonwood Creek of the average yield of those water sources. And that's concerning to us. And because of that, and also because of the outlook this summer for persistent drought, the dry soils, and the fact that that one source of water, our direct intake stream flows are so low, we have already declared a stage one response of our water shortage contingency plan, which is basically voluntary responses that we ask our community members, our businesses, our institutions, government agencies to undertake. And we have a number of recommendations for them. That being said, I received a little bit more information with respect to one of our sources of water. That's the Deer Creek Reservoir.
Yeah.
And the allocations to the water users in Deer Creek Reservoir are going to be less than 100% this year. I think it's about an 84% allotment, which is still okay, but it's not the full allotment. And that in combination with our surface water sources, I have recommended to declare a stage two response of our water shortage contingency plan. And that actually has some mandatory requirements for government facilities, so municipal facilities, parks, lawn watering, that kind of thing. At municipal facilities or state facilities, school districts, those kinds of government facilities. So we'll be working with our partners to implement that as well.
So the answer here, I guess, as we wait for, you know, hopefully wetter years, but we might not be seeing them, is the answer conservation? I mean, we just basically, the supply side we can't deal with, but the demand side we can, and so we all got to do our part, I guess.
That is correct. So the demand side is going to be very important this year, and we'll see that across the state. It will be important pretty much everywhere across the state, and it's going to be important in our service area as well, that everybody has a part to play in reducing water use, particularly during the high demand season, which is the irrigation season, the summer season. And Salt Lake City's water shortage contingency plan does have additional stages past stage two. We go all the way to stage five, and those stages have increasing requirements that could be placed on all of our customers as things go forward. And just a note, our water shortage contingency plan, that is something that was created with drought in mind, but also with other types of events that could cause a water shortage, such as, major infrastructure failure or a water quality event, right? So it's meant to really help us manage the demand side of the equation, especially when Mother Nature gives us less on the supply side of the equation.
Hey, can I ask, I forgot to ask this, when do you anticipate us going into that stage two? I mean, you've said you've requested that that be implemented or that that be approved. And I'm assuming that's a decision, I don't know, the mayor makes, the council makes after your recommendation. I'll start there, and then I've got one more follow-up.
Yes, the Salt Lake City will be making that recommendation this week.
Okay. And then I'm wondering, you mentioned that in government facilities on stage two, there's some mandatory requirements. What is just the next level up, stage three, look like?
Stage three is similar to stage two in terms of the requirements. It's still focused on government facilities. However, the engagement and outreach with our citizens and businesses starts increasing quite significantly. I think we will try to set up some times to coordinate with various businesses and others to see what can be done. It's really just that enhanced coordination effort, which honestly we're starting right now anyway,
sure.
Because that's the right thing to do in a year like this. And it's always an opportunity to help communicate an ethic around wise water use and efficient water use and not taking these natural resources for granted.
I guess the last question I'll ask, and I'm sorry I've taken more time than I told you I would, is do you expect it? I mean, we all know that the West is getting drier in general. Do you expect water, supply to become harder and harder? I mean, we've got a growing population. We've got, you're going to have more customers to try and, not mouths to feed, but mouths to quench, maybe. Do you expect things to get harder for the city when it comes to providing water to a growing population?
Yeah, another really great question. And this is something that I spend a lot of time planning for and thinking about. We've just recently completed our 60-year water supply and demand plan that takes in consideration not only population growth and the changes of uses of water in our particular community, such as, you know, for instance, more industrial water use potentially with the development of the Northwest Quadrant and Inland Port. But also we've taken into consideration climate change, and we have a climate change factor built into our long-term water resource management plan. And the combination of both of those in the water supply and demand plan have also led to new recommendations in our water conservation management plan that we just adopted this year as well. It's an update of our 2014 plan, but it includes much more stringent water conservation goals than we'd had before, in part because we need to make sure we're resilient in a changing climate in anticipation of more intense droughts like this, and also with that combining factor of population growth.
Wow. Laura Briefer is the director of Salt Lake City's Department of Public Utilities. Thank you so much for making time for this.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk with you.
You as well. So up until now, we've been talking mainly about the water supply, about the uses of water and conservation to help mitigate the problem of decreased availability. But the extreme dryness we are experiencing, of course, has other consequences, like wildfire. Chris Delaney is State Fire Management Officer with the Bureau of Land Management, and he says that fire officials from various agencies are preparing for the worst.
What I'll say is that, 100% of the state is in drought conditions, and 90% of that is an extreme drought. What our predictive services is telling us out of our geographic coordination center is that the last 18 months in Utah has been the driest 18 months in the 126 years that they've been recording data. So, we haven't seen conditions like this in at least in my career. We are training, preparing, planning with our interagency partners for the worst and really hoping for the best.
Yeah. Obviously, training is crucial. You're hoping for the best. You hope that people don't start those fires. What kinds of restrictions are you guys putting into place on public lands, and where are you doing that to try and get ahead of this? Obviously, you want to prevent people from causing wildfires inadvertently. How do you do that?
Well, that's a great point. You know, right now, and I'll just give you some quick statistics for 2021, which starts in January 1st. Statewide, we've seen 251 fires. 236 of those have been human caused. So when you talk about how do we reduce the potential for wildfire, every one of those human caused fires is preventable. And helping to educate the public, having responsible public land users when they go out and recreate, whether that's target shooting, riding motorcycles, or pulling their fifth wheels out to enjoy their public lands, being an educated user and helping us prevent those wildfires is absolutely key. Currently, right now, within the state of Utah, we have a statewide prevention order that's gone in place last week that prohibits using any exploding or binary targets and or fireworks on all BLM lands within Utah. As of this morning, our color country, or really our Southern Utah office, along with their interagency partners, have gone into fire restrictions that outlaw or prohibit a whole slew of other uses, grinding, welding, things like that. One of the great tools that I will recommend that all public land users, when they go out to recreate, we do have an interagency website, utahfireinfo.gov. There is an interactive map on there that they can click on, hover over the area that they're going to be recreating in, and it will show them all prevention orders and fire restrictions real time of what is allowed and what is not allowed so that they know. An example that I have is I had a lady email me yesterday. She was going to Emory County down in the San Rafael Swell and wanted to know if they could have an open fire. Currently, right now, we have no fire restrictions and prevention orders that cover that area for campfires. And she could have used the website to hover over that area and seen what restrictions are in place.
Sounds like a good tool for people who are headed out into the public lands in Utah. and I'll direct people to that website. I'm not going to ask you, Chris, just how I know it can get expensive, probably millions of dollars to fight fires every year. I won't ask for the specifics right now. But then there's the human cost, you know, the potential for lives lost, firefighters risking their lives. Do you ever try to appeal to the public on that front? Like, hey, when you go out and you act dumb, you're putting my colleagues and I at risk. Do you want to speak to that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, all of us get in this business because, you know, we love helping protect life and property, natural resources and people's public lands. But, you know, every time we go out there, there is an inherent risk, whether it's responding, driving to the fire itself, and then a whole inherent set of additional risks once we get there. You know, there's a couple things I would appeal to people is that, you know, we are happy to come out and help educate, but it's a lot easier to educate than it is to help put the fires out. And, you know, every time we ask our men and women, whether they work for the BLM or federal agencies or the state of Utah, you know, that is a chance that we take every day of somebody not coming home or getting seriously injured or disabled because, you know, in 2020, you know, we lost 12 firefighters nationally in wildland fires, and that's 12 too many people that aren't going to come home to their families for Thanksgiving or at the end of the day. And you know, that's the emotional appeal that we make to folks is, you know, we love to see people out there using their public lands, but please be educated and be responsible for your actions and help us prevent wildfires.
Do you expect this to? I mean, things to keep getting worse in the West, meaning more droughts, worse fires, more intense fires, harder to fight fires?
Well, you know, what we have seen is that we used to call them fire seasons really have come year round. Our Northern District, West Desert District, saw at least one fire every month. That includes December, January. You know, fires are getting more intense. They're getting larger, more expensive. And they're encroaching more into what we call the urban interface. And we're starting to see more interactions with the communities where people live. And do I think it's going to get worse? I think absolutely. We're doing everything we can to try to prevent a lot of these, not only by educating the public, but hazardous fuels reductions and fuels projects in the shoulder seasons. And, you know, our interagency partners are doing the same things with prescribed fires and fuels treatments with fuel breaks and
trying to innovate, trying to get ahead of the curve as
trying to break the cycle. Yeah.
Chris Delaney is State Fire Management Officer with Bureau of Land Management. Is there anything else you want to add here? I mean, I think you've made the appeal to people pretty directly, but
some of the things I'll just hit on that folks really we would appeal with them to be educated. One, some of our highest or our most frequent fire starters are target shooting. Shooting in the dry brush or shooting rocks and getting ricochets. The other is unmaintained vehicles, whether that's hooking up your tow chains properly, whether that's proper maintenance on tires. We see a lot of fire started by tires blowing out. And even just simple things of not parking on dry grass when you go out to the wildlands or to your public lands. Stay parked on clear soil. Simple things like that that make a world of difference and can really prevent a lot of catastrophic event and tax dollars being spent on suppression.
Got it. And I guess the parking on the dry grass is you got a hot undercarriage of your car and that just ignites the grass is the idea.
Yep.
Chris Delaney, thank you again for making time for this.
Hey, thanks for everything and good luck.
You too. So check out conditions before you go. Again, you can do that at utahfireinfo.gov. Be extremely cautious, help save property and lives, and while you're at it, why not conserve water? Because scientists say that the West is going to become increasingly drier for years to come as a result of climate change. Thanks for listening to In the Hive today here on KCPW. A listener-supported and entirely independent public radio resource. Find podcasts in your podcast app or at kcpw.org. Our theme music is by Andrew Shaw. I'm Roger McDonough. Stay safe out there and join us again next week.